Blog Talk Radio.
All right, welcome into the Chip Williams podcast here as we are starting to get deep into December now. What is today, December 12th? We're deep on into December. We're back with Kevin Hughes. Football's over, kind of. College football is done. We've got one college game this weekend, then some bowl games, and that's it. It flies by. We've got some NFL, but it's just not as exciting as college to me. The NFL's fine. I watch it, but I'm a college guy. I live for college stuff. So, Kevin Hughes, how are you doing today? Kevin.
Weeks of.
Hey, Kevin.
Yeah.
My man. Sorry, I couldn't hear you. We're good now. We're good to go.
You can hear me? All right, good. Yeah, I said I was having flashbacks to my 20-game losing streak in bowl season last year in gambling. I got absolutely slaughtered. So, I'm trying to regroup mentally and go into bowl season with a fresh approach this year, because last year was an absolute disaster.
It's fun gambling, I guess, on bowl games, but it's also impossible. Like, there's no logic. There's no reason.
None.
I guess there's really no logic or reason to any gambling that happens usually. Like, what, you know? But
right.
Especially in bowl season, you just kind of throw it out. You know, it's like because Ole Miss got beat by like 45 against TCU last year, and there's no reason for that to happen. Ole Miss just didn't care. They just didn't play. So that's the thing you got to factor in. Is that, like, who's gonna care? Who cares? You know?
Yeah, right. No, for sure. And I want to say Ole Miss was like dogged by like 4 or 5 points in that game. And so I said, hey, I mean, I don't know if Ole Miss is going to win, but I got to think they can compete. And it turns out they could absolutely not compete. So, I'm probably just going to not lay bets. I mean, I think betting on the playoff is a different story, because you know both those teams care. So I think that's a safer thing. But last year, I ended up, huddled in the shower crying after the last beat falling went down. I think it was I had to watch Baylor blow a 24-point lead in the fourth quarter. So that was when I really just, my spirit broke altogether.
Yeah, I'm done. I'm done with Baylor TCU. Like, I feel like they're supposed to be good, but they never cover those big lines, you know, especially, and now they got guys banged up, you know. I'm kind of out on both of those two teams. And really, just trying to figure out how to bet the Big 12 in general, it's been impossible. It has been absolutely impossible. You know, one week Kansas State looks great. The next week they're getting beat by 40. One week Texas upsets Oklahoma. You know, the next week they're losing by 3 touchdowns to Iowa State. It makes no sense. The Big 12 makes no sense. So I'm done. I'm out on betting. Hey, I got to ask you before we jump into our regular stuff, have you gotten a chance to listen to the new Serial podcast yet about a phone?
No, you know, I haven't. It's on a list. I've been meaning to get to. I've heard a lot of good things about the Tim Ferriss podcast with Jamie Foxx, and so that's up next on my list, and then I will definitely be getting around to Serial. I've been consuming like nonstop Bill Simmons podcasts recently, because there's been a lot available and I've been there. But I'm definitely excited about it. I did see Creed, however. Have you caught that yet?
I have not caught that yet, but I've only heard unbelievable things. So I'm curious about your take on that.
Man, I was blown away. It was absolutely awesome.
Okay.
Like, I had a great time in it. I already bought the soundtrack. It's a soundtrack that'll make you run through a wall. Sylvester Stallone, like, I heard that he was getting Oscar buzz for this movie, and thought that was obviously bullshit, and then I saw it and he was fantastic at it. So cannot recommend that enough.
Michael B. Jordan, a good boxer, or at least he plays a good boxer.
Oh my God. Well, the whole thing with this movie that I heard beforehand was about this. They had a two minute continued shot. So there were no breaks in one full round of his boxing scene. And so that may not mean anything to you until you actually see it. But, you know, in most choreographed fighting movies, it's almost entirely break. They break away from the action all the time, and they cut and they change angles rapidly. And this is just a 2 minute continued shot kind of an over the shoulder perspective of him boxing, and it's incredible. It really is. It is a movie that you should definitely see in theaters, because I mean, it's just visually it's pretty incredible. So I came away extremely impressed. I'm not a huge fan of the Rocky franchise. Like, I like it, but I don't sit around and watch the marathons when they're on.
No, I'm with you. Rocky's fine. You know, it seems like everybody, or not everybody, but there are a lot of people that have some pretty hard takes and hard stances on the Rocky franchise, and, you know, what's the best movie, or they, you know, marathon it all the time. And I'm just not. I don't have any super hard takes on it. I thought it was fine. But I keep hearing great things about this Creed, so I've definitely got to check it out. I know Michael B. Jordan, he was great. Bill Simmons' podcast a couple of weeks back, I enjoyed that. And
yeah.
I threw this last on the topics, but since we're kind of talking about it, go ahead and the Wire. So we talked about it last week. I've started watching The Wire. I haven't quite finished the first season. It's been a really crazy week. It's been a wild week, honestly. And so I just haven't had a ton of, but obviously Michael B. Jordan, he's in The Wire. And so I'm watching it, and there's a guy that he's kind of the main drug guy, I guess, in The Wire. He runs basically like the West Side Project in Baltimore. He's the head guy, basically who they're trying to go after. His name is Avon Barksdale. And it occurred to me, I was just kind of looking, the actor's name is Wood Harris, and I don't know if you're familiar with Wood Harris, but he also plays Julius in Remember the Titans. You remember?
Oh, yeah.
Sure you remember the Titans and Julius. So Wood Harris.
For sure.
So it worked out perfectly. So you look at Remember the Titans, that took place in Virginia, right? So what it got me thinking was Julius graduated high school at Remember the Titans, kind of didn't work out in college, changed his name to Avon Barksdale, and started running the West Side Project for The Wire. It worked out perfectly.
You're running all kinds of conspiracy theories now, and I'm a huge fan of that game. So no, I said last time I need to get on The Wire, but I mostly want to get on The Wire because it's probably the most referenced show in pop culture. It really is. I know that like the name McNulty gets thrown around so often in popular culture, and I never know what it means. So I need to get on that, but. No, I'm a fan of any kind of conspiracy theories. Those are one of the few kinds of just nonsensical links on Facebook that I'll click on because I can't get enough of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it works out perfect. But yeah, Julius graduates high school, moves to Baltimore because college football doesn't work out for him, and all of a sudden he changes his name to Avon Barksdale and runs the West Side Project. Dope, and that's who McNulty's going after, is Avon Barksdale. So. I won't go into it too deep since you haven't watched it, but it was funny. I'm a big fan of that actor. He's really good. He was he's really good in Remember the Titans, which is a top 10 movie for me all time. I was talking to somebody recently, and they were like, well, what's your favorite movie of all time? I was like, I'm kind of tempted to say Remember the Titans. And they were like, well, you know, you're a grown-up now. What's really your favorite movie? I was like,
right.
It can't be Remember the Titans now that I'm no longer 15 years old. Like, I have to.
You know,
I'm a massive
contrarian about that movie. I don't enjoy it. I think Denzel is really good in it. I think that I can't think of a football movie that's been made that has worse football in it. Like, it's just the football is not believable at all.
That's fine.
I think the acting's fine. I thought it was an enjoyable movie. Looking back on it now, it's fun to see like Ryan Gosling playing in a secondary on a state championship football team, and the black guy from Scrubs and Clueless.
Yeah.
Like that, there's some fun people in it. But I don't think it's in terms of football movies. I don't think it stands up to Any Given Sunday or Friday Night Lights.
Well, I get that. I get that, especially like when they start playing games. Remember the Titans is really not the game action is not great. But I thought the practice was good. You know, when they went up to I guess it was Gettysburg College and they were kind of doing the whole, the training camp, whatever. I thought that was good. I thought that was pretty, accurately portrayed. But it was so much more, about race and things like that than it was about the actual football games. And listen, any movie with Denzel is going to rank high for me. Like, Denzel can take such an average script and make it a good movie. It's impressive. I love that guy. I love Denzel.
You know that he's only ever made one movie that didn't turn a profit.
Really?
I think he has. I think I've read that. Yeah.
Denzel.
Well, I guess more if you're a studio, you want to get Denzel because he has the lowest flop percentage of any major actor. I think everyone else now, like Tom Cruise is up there. Like he very rarely makes a movie that flops. Will Smith was doing well with that for a while until he got totally insane and went off. Have you seen Focus?
No.
Oh God, it's a terrible movie. Like he's like a con man gambler thing, and they brought Margot Robbie in, who, you know, from Wolf of Wall Street, and she's just so incredibly fun to look at. You can kind of just throw her in anything, and it's fine. But no, I mean, it's a terrible. Like, Will Smith had like what in your opinion, what is Will Smith's last good movie?
I literally just Googled it, and I'm kind of looking at it. I mean, obviously the Men in Blacks were good, but that was a long time ago. I think
the last
Will Smith movie I saw in theaters was I Am Legend, and it was not good. I'm trying to think. I don't know. You tell me.
I mean, I think the last thing I can think of. No, I mean like Hutch or Hitch is like the last thing I could think of that I actually enjoyed watching him in. But you know, like when you look at the movie roles, he turned down the role of Neo in The Matrix, which I'm glad he did. I'm glad he did because that movie would have been terrible with him in it. But he also he turned down the Django role in Django Unchained.
Oh,
and that's a movie I think he would have done really well in. Yeah, well,
yeah, absolutely.
He.
Jamie
you
Fox
know, I think
great.
I think
like that, Jamie Foxx was fantastic at Django, but yeah, well,
no, he was incredible. He was incredible, and if my thing is, if you're an actor though, and Quentin Tarantino comes in and says, "Hey, come be in a movie," you just don't say no to that. There's no reason to ever say no to him.
Right. This is good, but let's. I got like 1,000 things I want to ask you about. So you want to blitz through some picks really fast?
Let's do it.
So, one college football game, Army at Navy. I have no idea. I genuinely have no idea. I think Navy's really good, so just lay 21.5. I will put no money on this. I do not advise anyone to put any money on this. I have no strong opinion. I don't think Army's very good, and I think Navy's pretty good, but, you know, 3 touchdowns is a lot to play with. So I was tempted. I saw where some of the big money was coming in on Army plus 21.5. But I could just so see myself taking that and then being so pissed when Navy's up 35-3 in the second quarter that I didn't, you know, go ahead and just lay the point. So I'm just going to lay it. I see Navy be really good at points this year. So I'm going to lay it. If you want to take Army plus 21.5, I don't care. That's fine. I have no strong feelings one way or the other. I'm sure you don't either, right?
No, this is a classic game that I just can't imagine it being a good idea to bet on with that spread. Like it's just way too much in a game that means too much. And when you have teams like this, where there's just not that many great athletes on the field, it comes down to coaching and these guys have had so long to scheme for each other and plan for each other. I think you're smarter doing live game betting on that game.
That's a good call.
As it goes, because I mean, you got to get a feel for that game. If Navy comes out and is just wrecking them, because I know their coach is rumored to be talking to BYU. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. Yeah, I'm a big fan of. All right, I'm going to try it. Ken Niumatalolo, something like that. I'm a big fan of that. Like I think that guy, he's a very good football coach. I like his offense, and I guess it would make sense at BYU. Real quick, Bronco Mendenhall going to Virginia. I think it's a coincidence that he's going to the same state that Justin Fuente is going to, seeing how the Miami Beach Bowl turned out last year with a massive brawl. Like, you think we're going to get this every year now with Virginia Tech just Justin Puente and Bronco Mendenhall's teams beating the crap out of each other at the end of every game.
That would be awesome. And what an incredible hire by Virginia, and what an incredible offseason for the ACC. Like, I mean, it's they just did such a good job of hiring their coaches. That conference in general just it definitely gets they win the offseason by a mile. I mean, they brought in some really nice coaches. I don't know what's going to happen to Syracuse with your guy Babers, but like there are significantly better coaches in the Atlantic Coast Conference now than there were this time last year.
You're absolutely right. Quickly, some NFL picks. Washington at Chicago. Chicago's laying 3.5. I was really tempted to take Washington plus 3.5 because I actually think they're playing well. I these are two teams that I think everybody wrote off really early in the season. And while Chicago's probably not going to make the playoffs, Washington has a chance to win the division. Chicago playing a lot better than they were. They started off just atrocious. I mean, absolutely a terrible football team. They've somewhat righted the ship. So while I was looking at the Washington and Chicago line, I was kind of reading a preview on it just to see, you know, just to make sure there weren't any weird injuries that would skew the line. So Washington is 1-18 in their last 19 road games. And I mean, that just blew me away. 1-18 in their last 19 road games. So I'm like, screw it. I'm just taking Chicago, laying the 3.5 for no other reason than Washington. There's almost no chance they win this game. So all Chicago does is have to beat them by at least 4. So whatever, just lay and pray, I guess, right?
Yeah, no, that's all you can do. That really is all you can do. And that, I mean, like we said earlier, it's a rough time of year to gamble on football at college because you don't know where any of these teams are at. There are so many behind the scenes issues that we have no idea. Like, if you look at Tennessee, I don't know. If you look at Tennessee, it's just like there's so much crazy stuff going on. And in the NFL, it's kind of the same though. Like, I have no idea. I have no idea where to go on NFL games right now because like I know a couple guys who've been loading up on the Patriots recently and just getting crushed on it.
Yeah.
Because I legitimately thought with the New England Patriots, like, you can plug any receiver in there and they'll be fine, and you can't. So, I'm with you on that. My problem with these picks every time we do them is I have never had less confidence as a picker on football games because my record's been okay this year, but I don't think I've been making logical, educated picks. I think it's just been kind of gut instinct stuff.
It has been a very weird year picking games, like weirder than any of the last, I don't know, half decade or whenever I really kind of started paying attention to stuff like that. The lines have been weird. You know, I think probably in the NFL some of that has to do with them moving back the extra point because now you have to get to factor that in. Like, what if a team misses an extra point or they decide to go for two because they don't feel confident? You know, their kicker pulled a hamstring earlier or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just so many weird things that you have to factor in now. Pat's laying 3.5 at the Texans. So this feels like a good spot for the Patriots because they're coming off back-to-back losses. That may have hammered this line down a little bit. I think the Texans are super overrated. They've won some games, but they play in probably the second worst division in football in the AFC South, so they've done well there. I feel fine. I feel fine laying only 3.5 with the Pats. I still think they're really good. There's a chance Gronk plays. Probably not, though. There's a small chance. There's also J.J. Watt broke his hand on Wednesday. So, J.J. Watt is the ultimate warrior. That will at least slow him down a little bit. I would have to imagine that it makes it uncomfortable at the very least. So, just going to go ahead and lay 3.5 with the pass. I think getting a pretty small number at the Texans.
No, yeah, I think the pass is fine. I guess my concern there is how often is Houston going to get to Tom Brady and just destroy him? I will be surprised if J.J. Watt is hampered too much by the hand. I mean, the hand is a doable injury for a defensive end, and you know he's wearing that cast, which is like just basically a weapon that he gets to add to his already pretty weaponized body. So. That feels not fair, but the game I think I could just see the Patriots struggling because I just don't know where they're at on offense right now. They're having such a hard time replacing people. I think what people are starting to figure out is that Tom Brady's really good. I mean, he's really good, but his little group of receivers that he trusts and Gronk are the most important part of that team by a significant amount. You know, I mean, those guys are really, really good. They fit really well in that system. But that offensive line is just terrible. And if Brady just gets destroyed early, I think we've seen before that when that happens, when teams can get to Tom Brady, they just have a hard time putting them away. So I don't have a hard time wrapping my head around the Patriots winning the game. If it was, I mean, 3.5 is pretty low. So I like that. I mean, I think you're making the right bet. It just wouldn't surprise me to see it come down to a field goal situation late in the game. So, I mean, I don't know. But if I'll be very curious to see what happens in terms of if Brady can make it out of this game alive. Let's say the Texans go up by 21 points at some point. Like, do the Pats even attempt a comeback if Brady's been getting hit all game, or do they just pull him and try to, you know, find their seed in the playoffs and keep moving and just keep the pieces moving until they can get everybody back in the field?
Yeah, I hear you. I just, outside of DeAndre Hopkins, you know, catching a pass and then making something happen, I just don't know how the Texans are even going to score 21 points. You know, like Brian Hoyer is their quarterback, and they don't have Arian Foster. The running backs that they do have are all questionable. I don't know. I mean, I'm, you know, they may get a defensive touchdown, you know, a strip sack of Brady, something like that, but I don't know. I don't know. You made me feel worse about it, Kevin. So damn it. But
no, I don't think that's the situation. I think it's just the Patriots were invincible like 3 weeks ago, and you know, Tom Brady was the greatest quarterback to ever live, and then we learned a lot about that team, and it's that. When Tom Brady has two receivers that he really trusts and he really likes, he is pretty unbeatable. But when he doesn't, when you throw in some average guys with him, that offense sort of just falls apart. So I agree. If they're playing a better team than Houston, I would not want to bet on the Patriots. But the Houston is terrible. Right. They're complete garbage. So I think you should sleep fine on that. I suspect that at some point a field goal is going to play a pretty big role at the end of that game. Because I think the Patriots may be having to come back in that game, which is fine for you as long as they can kind of do it with enough time.
Right. And, you know, I look at it at the inverse, too. Like, I would feel awful about taking the Texans plus 3.5. Like, I would have zero – I wouldn't touch them. Like, I would have zero confidence in that. And I feel okay about Pats minus 3.5. So, Giants, they're laying 1.5 at the Dolphins. I didn't really have any numbers to back this thing up, but – this is the one of those where Eli came off a rough game last week, and so it's kind of every other week with him. And also the Giants are playing for a playoff spot too. Like that division is so atrocious that a, I don't know, 7-9, 8-8 team might win that division. The Dolphins, I think they're kind of done. Like, you know, that they played well for that new coach for a couple of weeks, and they just haven't been very good since. So I'm banking on a good Eli game. I'm banking on ODB. To maybe score a couple of touchdowns. And I'm fine. I'm fine laying 1.5 to not a very good football team. And the Giants, they really have something to play for. I mean, it's just because, you know, the Giants, they get into the playoffs and all bets are off. You know, they could be 6-10 in the playoffs and all of a sudden, you know, Eli, the last week of the season, throws 3 touchdowns, starts to get a little bit hot. And I don't think anybody would want to play him. You know, I don't have a super high opinion of Eli Manning. But I think when the guy gets hot, he's about as good as it gets, especially when you get to the playoffs.
No, he terrifies his opponents because you just never know what he's going to do. That big, you know, just kind of dumb mouth breathing thing that he's got going on over there, where he could throw 8 touchdowns in a game, and he could throw 6 picks. there's just no way to know. So yeah, I don't know. Eli Manning, I mean, like, the fact that he's really what's left of the Manning namesake is so disappointing for people who are fans of that family. Because he's, like, I just don't understand. Are you curious to see, like, surely at some point we're going to see a non-Tom Coughlin coach Giants team. Like, I just would love to see another coach come in there and get their hands on that team, because the Giants should probably be winning that division every year. I mean, that division has just been nothing but nonsense for a while now, and they just can't. They either can't get over the hump or they win Super Bowls. It's got to be one of the stranger things that's happened in the NFL. I guess like the Ravens kind of have that feel to them, where they either just suck or they go all the way. Like there's never really a one or the other. But I don't know. The Dolphins are terrible though. Like the Dolphins are really bad. They're really bad. So I think Eli's fair there.
Tannehill is, I don't know, I don't think he's an NFL quarterback. He has his moments where he looks good, but at some point it's like, okay, you've got to start like putting together 3, 4, 5 game stretches where you're good. And I'm just not sure that he's good. I really have no idea if Ryan Tannehill's good. And yeah, you're right. At some point in our lifetimes, I'm confident we will see Tom Coughlin get fired, because he's literally on the hot seat, it feels like, every single year, and he does just enough to keep his job, or I don't know. Maybe
they keep winning that division. They keep like being competitive in that division, which is a terrible division, and you're competing with the Washington professional football team and the Dallas Cowboys each and every year. It's just it's up there of like the most historic and perennially entertaining divisions, and like that's a division where we just watch that and it's like, man, I guess we're entertained because it's always a fun storyline if the Cowboys make a late run or if the Redskins are going to be decent, but really they just all suck every year except for the two times that Eli broke through and won Super Bowls.
Right. Teaser this week. So I felt really good about this teaser, like probably as good as any teaser that I've thrown out there all season, which makes me think that something's going to happen and I'll probably lose one of the games. But it just seems so obvious. I mean, it seemed incredibly obvious. Falcons at Panthers, you tease the Panthers down to -2, and then Raiders at Broncos, you tease the Broncos down to -1. I just think it's so obvious. Like, why would you not tease both those teams down to less than a field goal when I feel 99% confident that they're both going to win the game? And they're both at home. Like, there is no reason not to play this teaser. So that means that something will happen. You know, the Falcons will decide that they're good again, and Matt Ryan will hit Julio Jones for 4 touchdowns, and they'll beat the Panthers or something. Or Brock Osweiler will remember that he's Brock Osweiler and not Peyton Manning, and he'll throw 5 picks and it's something. I don't know. But it just seems so obvious to me, and I couldn't not play it.
No, I like it. I think the Panthers are just going to absolutely destroy the Falcons. Very weird for me being like a North Carolina product and not being a Panthers fan, because, you know, it's like I wholeheartedly believe it's way too late for me to hop on that bandwagon. Like it would just be such a sorry move for me to pick that team up. And I don't even really like them that much. Like I actually do like Cam Newton. Luke Kuechly is easy to like. I mean, they have some pieces. Like I enjoy how unconventional of a team they are. But it's strange for me because people always ask, and when they hear I'm from North Carolina, they want to talk about the Panthers, and I don't know what to say. I don't like Panthers fans all that much. That's a lot of my social media feed from people back home. But I don't enjoy their fan base. They have a weird fan base over there.
Is that right? Yeah, I like Charlotte. I actually went to Charlotte this summer to watch the soccer team I root for in England. They were actually playing a team from France and just happened to be playing it in Charlotte. So I made the 10-hour trip, whatever, from Memphis to Charlotte. I thought it was a cool city. I was a big fan of Charlotte, North Carolina.
It's a very cool
city.
Have you been to Houston?
I've never been to Houston, no.
It reminds me of Houston. It's Charlotte, like Charlotte had their big boom during like the banking stuff, which obviously went belly up at some point. But they have it's a cool town. They have there's some really fun bars to go to. I don't think the city itself has a whole lot of personality. Like I don't think Charlotte has a whole lot of identity as a city.
Right.
But other than that, like I've had some really good times down there. It's 45 minutes from my hometown, so I've definitely spent some time there. I've been to a bunch of Panthers and Hornets games, but Yeah, so I think they'll clean the Falcons up, and then is there anything more interesting in the NFL right now, like than what's going to happen with this Peyton Manning, Brock Osweiler thing in Denver?
Oh, I think you just, like, Peyton's done until further notice. Until Brock Osweiler starts being terrible, there's no reason to play Peyton again. As much as that is not fun to say, I think that's where we are, right?
Well, I think so. And also, like, the Broncos went from being in a really potentially, like, tough spot with a quarterback, having a legend who wasn't quite ready and or wasn't healthy, and then, like, a young guy that no one knew if he was quite ready. And now they have a young guy with what seems like a lot of potential, and then the greatest backup quarterback of all time in Peyton Manning. That's Peyton Manning's perfect role. Like, use him circumstantial. Yeah. I mean, like, whatever you got to do, but, like, it's crazy because as someone who has Tennessee allegiance and loves Peyton Manning, like, it hurts me to watch Peyton Manning kind of be shoved back like that. But at the same time, it seems like it's the perfect scenario because if they could figure out how to use Peyton Manning in certain situations and just give him, once he's healthy again or close to it, just like use him and let him get some snaps in, if they could somehow figure out a way to manage that and manage minutes there, that could be like the most deadly combination anybody's ever seen because Peyton can't throw the long ball but he clearly has a better grasp of the offense than almost anybody. So if you could just kind of let him do the nickel and dime stuff and then let Brock Osweiler be the big gun out there. If they could figure out, that seems like a very hard thing to do. But if they could, then all of a sudden, you're like, man, Peyton's in a really good spot.
Yeah. We're doing like the Eric Ainge, Brent Schaefer thing, like where, you need Ainge on passing situations and Brent Schaefer
well,
to come run it and every once in a while
throw
a bomb.
That's what's funny about it, though. It's funny because obviously neither one of those guys are a running threat, but the mental effect of if you use Peyton Manning in a specific circumstance, if you brought him in and the defense right there, you got to think about what's going through their mind. Like, hey, can this guy throw a deep ball on us, or is he just going to be throwing 10-yard outs? You know, like, can he? But I think if you restrict his throws and you bring him down, then all of a sudden he hits a play action and he's just bombing. I mean, Peyton can still throw a couple bombs a game. They're not great, but they're accurate. Especially if he's not having to throw the ball that often. So I just think mentally, a backup quarterback always rattles the defense, whether they're good, they're bad, they're just trying to figure out what's going on. If that backup quarterback's name is Peyton Manning, I just don't know what that does to the defense, where they're at. You know, I mean, like, oh, my God, their backup just came in and it's Peyton freaking Manning, and he's got a fresh arm on him. We have no idea what's getting ready to happen.
Oh, backup quarterbacks are the worst, especially when they can run. I mean, how many times – I mean, just off the top of my head, I can remember Treon Harris last year coming in and beating Tennessee. You know, they knocked, how was his name, Driscoll, out of the game. And all of a sudden, here comes Treon Harris, and they win a disgusting game in Knoxville. And this year, I was watching Memphis, and they knocked that the Ward Jr. kid out of Houston. And Houston's backup quarterback came in. They were the Tigers were up by, like, 3 touchdowns. And the Houston backup came in and won them the game. And then Cincinnati for Memphis this year. So they knocked out Gunnar Keel. Memphis knocks out Gunnar Keel for Cincinnati. The backup quarterback comes in, sets the school record for passing yards in a game. They didn't win Cincinnati, but it's just these backup quarterbacks. You're right. It's so true. You never know what to expect because you game plan for one guy the whole time. Then all of a sudden, here comes somebody new, does something a little bit differently, and it can really screw things up. I mean, it can really, really screw things up for a defense. Unfortunately, it never worked out for, like, when the Vols had to throw, like, Nathan Peterman out there or Jonathan Crofton in weird situations. Like, they were
I think you could look at, I think Kyler Bray was a good replacement in 2010 for Matt Sims. I mean, he won, I guess, 4 of his 5 games. Josh Dobbs, I mean, it's kind of hard to consider him a backup quarterback, but I mean, he still kind of fits in that category. So it's happened, but you're right. I mean, in Tennessee, I think, and we can touch on this later. I think Tennessee may, I've heard some rumors that the backup quarterback at Tennessee right now, Quentin Dormady, isn't necessarily thrilled with what's going on with recruiting. And so So I mean, they're about to be in an interesting position next year potentially with their quarterback stuff. So it's you're right though, the backup quarterback game has never worked out quite in Tennessee's favor the way it has overwhelmingly against them.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about that. I'm curious about that. I do want to talk about the Heisman though. So that's kind of the big thing I guess going on. The Heisman odds are out, and this is an interesting year. You know, this is kind of. So you invite three guys, Derrick Henry, Deshaun Watson, and Christian McCaffrey, and you invite them, you know, all three for kind of different reasons. You know, you got Derrick Henry, who broke Herschel Walker's single-season rushing record with 1,986 yards, which is incredible. I think he did it in more games, but actually fewer carries than what Herschel Walker got that season that he set the record. And I just kind of jotted down off the top of my head some of the running backs that have played in the SEC. Between the time that Herschel Walker set the record and Derrick Henry did. It's an impressive list. I'll read them off. Todd Gurley, Travis Henry, Trent Richardson, Eddie Lacy, Mark Ingram, Jeremy Hill, Arian Foster, Emmitt Smith, Cadillac Williams, Ronnie Brown, Kevin Falk, Sean Alexander, Darren McFadden, and Bo Jackson. That's an impressive list of running backs. So that just kind of puts in perspective the type of season Derrick Henry had. He was unbelievable. I mean, he was so good for Alabama. McCaffrey, equally as impressive, broke Barry Sanders' all-purpose yards record with 3,496, 1,100 more than the next closest player in all-purpose yards. So he was amazing, which is somebody that I would assume that a lot of people around here don't know a ton about because he's in the Pac-12 and he plays at, you know, 11 o'clock at night sometimes. It's just that there's such an East Coast bias. You know, where we live, you don't really hear about the West Coast teams. And then Deshaun Watson had a great season. He's just kind of the obligatory quarterback invite of the number one team in the country. He's not going to win. Deshaun Watson's clearly not going to win.
No.
Derrick Henry is the heavy favorite at minus 500 right now. But if I was betting, I'd throw a little bit of cash on McCaffrey plus 325 because while I understand the type of season Derrick Henry had, I think McCaffrey's was pretty close to as good. Like, it was pretty close to the magnitude of records that he broke. Henry had, I think, 11 more touchdowns than McCaffrey this season, so that might be where the separation is. But, I mean, I feel okay. You know, if you wanted to throw $10 on McCaffrey plus 325, you just kind of roll the dice, don't you think?
Yeah, no, I think it's a safe bet. I think the Heisman is such a weird, non-scientific formula, like how they choose who gets invited, and I have kind of an issue with the whole thing. But I think in the last when it comes down to that last week, it's just about narrative. I think the people who are voting on this really pay attention to what the storyline is, and you know we saw it with the obvious example of Peyton Manning that the narrative just took over there and Charles Woods ends up winning. But the narrative right now, so they introduced the idea, like, hey, like the Pac-12 screwed themselves up by taking away the viewing options of the entire rest of the country, so no one ever knows who our guys are. And people are like, hey, look at Christian McCaffrey, look what he's capable of doing. Derrick Henry's just boring. And Derrick Henry did have, I mean, like, he clearly just broke all the records, but he had kind of a boring season. He never had that one Heisman moment, that one just really incredible play. So I think it turns into how the media spins it this week and kind of what the narrative is heading into the last night. McCaffrey has a long way to go to overcome that, but he certainly has a shot because people are going to start because sports media is what it is. People will start to prop him up and campaign for him, you know, through social media or whatever. So it's a propaganda game at this point, almost, in my opinion.
No, I agree with you. Just to be clear, I absolutely think Derrick Henry's going to win. But if you just kind of look at it, you know, one guy broke Herschel Walker's record, one guy broke Barry Sanders' record. Like that, I mean, that's impressive, you know. And it's not like Derrick Henry, like you said, he wasn't, you know, all over the highlight reels. It was gross what Alabama did to teams. I mean, they just flat out drilled you. I mean, they went on death marches every drive, just handing it to Henry over and over and over. And it was like, you know, Lane Kiffin's play sheet at this point needs to be about the size of an index card. You got Henry left, Henry right, and then maybe a couple of play actions off of that. And you don't need to do anything else. You just let your talent be better than everybody else. So it wasn't super exciting what Derrick Henry did. McCaffrey, on the other hand, is incredibly exciting. You know, he scores the long touchdowns. He returns kicks. He returns punts. They involve him in the passing game. Like, he's a lot of fun. So I think that part of the West Coast being out there, he's a running back. He plays at Stanford, which I guess people just kind of assume is a boring place. You know, what Harbaugh did there, you know, putting, like, you know, eight linemen in the game at times and just kind of lining up, grinding down. Like, even Andrew Luck, he was considered the best quarterback prospect in a long time, but he didn't do things in college that just made you go like, oh, wow, you know, this guy is amazing. You know, I guess you had to have a really trained eye to understand how good Luck was. So it is weird. I think there's pretty much zero chance that Deshaun Watson wins this thing. Like, I'd be blown away if his name was called to win the Heisman Trophy. But it'll be interesting. You're right. I think a lot of it does have to do with how the media spins. And I would assume that Derrick Henry probably wins it, and he probably deserves to. But I think there's easily a case to be made for Christian McCaffrey winning it.
Yeah, Derrick Henry thing, do you remember the storyline from, like, even just a couple of years ago was, like, if you are a high-octane running back coming out of high school, you go to Alabama because they have this incredible stable of running backs, and you will get limited carries up until your senior year. Your senior year, you'll get the bulk of the carries. You'll have your big breakout year. We'll definitely send you the pros, but your body will be your body will have, you know, thousands less miles on it because of how we stack that up. And all of a sudden you have Derrick Henry, and he's doing all the work. And part of that's due to injury, but it's just interesting how that whole thing kind of shifted. They went from being like a team that always had four or five great backs to being a team that had, like really just one guy they had to lean on the whole time.
Right. Especially when Kenyon Drake got hurt. Seems like Drake has been there for a long time because we're just so used to the Bama running backs. Like, they're kind of one and done guys. Like, they have the one great season of a bunch of carries and then they're out. And look, like, they have another guy, Bo Scarborough, who I think is a true freshman this year, who is almost the exact same size as Derrick Henry. So in 2 years, Bo Scarborough will probably be in New York, you know, coming off of a 2,000-yard rushing season. And it is unbelievable what Alabama does recruiting these backs, these massive, massive bruisers. That's their formula. They just go recruit the biggest athletes, and they just beat you down with it. They've always done that. They've never really adapted to the whole spread style. They even do it on defense. You know, Tennessee, they've kind of taken the philosophy of having the speedier, smaller linebackers. Like, you look at, like, Jalen Reeves-Maven's a perfect example. He was a guy that some projected as a safety coming out of high school. Well, they put, you know, 10, 15 pounds on him. They move him down to outside linebacker, and he's a beast. And that's just kind of what they've done. Alabama, they don't care. They've got the 260-pound linebacker who may be a step slow, but it's just they make it work. You know, I don't know how else to say it. They make it work, and they're bigger and they're more physical than you are. And, it's incredible. They're a machine.
Not on the Heisman, but I want to do something now that is very difficult to do in a podcast scenario. I want to break some news with you here. There are two pieces of coaching news. The Tulsa football co-offensive coordinator Sterling Gilbert has turned down the Longhorns. Turned down the Texas job, which means Texas is just striking out in an unbelievable fashion. Yeah. And then potentially bigger news is that Alabama has hired Georgia defensive coordinator Jeremy Pruitt.
Okay, Jeremy Pruitt. What do you think of Pruitt?
Like, Chip Williams podcast is just breaking news out here.
That's what we do. You never know what you're going to get, right? We just kind of
And it
happens.
we're breaking news live. The people will hear 3 hours from now. But yeah, hey, I want everybody to know that we're on top of it here.
Or 3 days from now, Monday or Monday.
Either way.
So Jeremy Pruitt, real quick, we'll talk a little bit about it. He was kind of the big name coming into Georgia that was kind of, supposed to. Make a massive impact on the Georgia defense because he came over from Florida State, right? He'd been working at Florida State for the last few years and then came over to Georgia. It's a big name. I mean, I trust guys to work with Saban and be really good. So, I guess that they're going to pick up right where they left off and be just fine, right?
Yeah, I mean, gosh, it's just frustrating being a team that is a supposedly a rival of Alabama, because that's just such a great hire for them. I mean, like, Jeremy Pruitt desperately needs to work for a guy like Nick Saban. Like, it's the same way Lane Kiffin needed to work for a guy like Nick Saban. You need that no-nonsense boss for the young coaches who are just kind of out of control. And I shudder to think what the Alabama defense will look like under the combination of Nick Saban and I'm already blanking on his name. The guy we were just talking about, but the guy Jeremy Pruitt. Like, when you combine those two defensive minds, that's incredible. They're going to be a freakishly good defense. So it's disheartening as a Tennessee fan for sure, but like, just an incredible hire by Alabama.
Yeah, it is, and I mean, especially for recruiting purposes. Like, you have a guy that's already been at Georgia recruiting the big names in the SEC. And so he just kind of slides in. And that whole dynamic of Kirby Smart still coaching at Alabama but now recruiting for Georgia, it's weird. Like, it is super weird because, like, I saw a picture of, you know, Kirby Smart in a recruit's home taking a picture with him with Georgia gear on. And then, you know, here we are in a month from now, he'll be coaching Alabama in an Alabama shirt. You know, it's just weird. That whole situation's kind of weird. And so now I guess you're going to have Jeremy Pruitt, who's a future defensive coordinator, guy that used to be at Georgia, and now is going to be recruiting guys for Alabama.
I really hadn't even considered that. That's very interesting. That's goodness gracious.
It is very strange.
I don't know. And, you know, Auburn has, like, potentially targeted Willie Martinez from Tennessee as their next defensive coordinator, which – would be a job that obviously Willie Martinez would have to take, and I think everybody would understand
right.
that. But if I'm Auburn, I don't want to announce the Willie Martinez hire anywhere close to Alabama announcing the Jeremy Pruitt hire. Those two things just do not equal each other.
No, they don't. Let's talk about some bowl games real fast. So the Vols are going to play against Northwestern. The line opened up at 7. It's jumped up to Vols -8. I expect Tennessee to win this game. I don't have a great feeling. You know, I guess the general consensus from what I gathered was most Vol fans feel very, very confident about just going in and destroying Northwestern. I don't feel as confident about that because I think Northwestern is a pretty good football team. They have had bad losses. They have lost bad games this year that they probably shouldn't have. But I still think they're good. I've got a lot of respect for Pat Fitzgerald as a head coach. I think they've got a good defense and atrocious offense. It's probably going to be played like your typical Big Ten game, like maybe a total of 3 or 4 touchdowns are going to be scored in the whole game. Or it could turn out like Iowa last year, and all of a sudden the Vols just get something clicking and they roll 40, 50 points. That's just not something I see happening. I see something, you know, maybe like a 24-14 game or something like that. So what's been your kind of initial read on the Vols and Northwestern at this point?
It will be very disappointing for Tennessee if they lose this game. I mean, Butch Jones earlier this week made a comment that I guess they're saying Tennessee doesn't – he said Tennessee, he doesn't feel like they have a speed advantage over Northwestern. That's insane.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they are clearly the more athletic team. They have considerably better athletes. Tennessee will just have to beat themselves. That's the way I see it. Is they'll just have to screw up their own stuff. We've only seen a Butch Jones coach Tennessee team in one bowl game, and clearly they were very prepared and very motivated. But that was a very different situation. That was a kind of prove themselves moment. That was a first bowl appearance in a long time. This team sort of underachieved, so you kind of wonder where everybody's at mentally. You have guys trying to make decisions about going pro. That's something Tennessee's not really used to or hasn't had to deal with in a while. And Tennessee should win the game. Northwestern, the game is going to play out, I think, exactly like the Missouri and Vanderbilt games. Northwestern has a good defense. People consistently underrate the Tennessee offense, and it's just interesting. I mean, I'm sure you've noticed the incredible Twitter beef happening between Northwestern beat writers and Tennessee fans. It's been pretty ridiculous. But just in reading the Northwestern beat writers, their previews of Tennessee, they don't have respect for what Tennessee does on offense, which is crazy because Tennessee has run the ball and scored points on defenses far better than Northwestern's. I mean, they've played much more talented, at least athletically, teams. And if they think that the combination of Dobbs, Kamara, and Hurd is going to be easy to stop, then they are sorely mistaken. So Northwestern's going to have to score points. I think Tennessee's defense is playing well enough right now to keep that from happening. Northwestern does not have a good offense. I think the spread is about fair. Tennessee should win this game, in my opinion, by two touchdowns. But as I said before, they'll have to stop from beating themselves.
Well, you'd have to think, like, so you just kind of take a look at it. Alabama's probably got a better defense than Northwestern. I feel comfortable saying that. Florida at least has a more talented defense, I think, than Northwestern. Missouri is probably pretty close to on par with having a similar defense to Northwestern. I don't think Vanderbilt does, although I think, you know, Vanderbilt has a good defense. I expect Northwestern to be better, though. So, at best, maybe this is the third best defense that Tennessee's faced all year, but probably about the fourth. And so I just, there's nothing one defense outside of, I guess, Alabama that's really just been able to put the brakes on the Tennessee offense. And really, Tennessee did not play bad against Alabama, especially, all things considered, it was in Tuscaloosa and they had an opportunity to go win the game. And I just don't expect, especially from an athletic and a talent standpoint, that Northwestern's going to be anywhere near what that Alabama defense was. So, it has been interesting that, you know, these Northwestern beat writers literally get the balls no respect at all. I will be curious to see how many of these injured guys are able to come back and play. Like Preston Williams, we haven't seen, it feels like, in a long time. Juwan Jennings has been kind of in and out. Marquez North, he may just never play football again. I have no idea what's going on with Marquez. A lot of wide receivers that, maybe a month off, but will do them some good. And it is worth pointing out that while I have a ton of respect for, Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern, Butch Jones has an incredible record when he's got at least a week to prepare. And we saw what he did in his lone bowl appearance for the ball. So that may just be a wash. I mean, he may have his team completely ready to go, which I think he will. Real quick, while we're on the topic, Mark Elder, he's going to Eastern Kentucky. How big of a loss is that for Tennessee? Because I kind of feel like it's pretty big. Like, hey, Mark Elder's been with Butch Jones for a long time, and his special teams have always been really good.
Yeah. No, really, really, really big loss for Tennessee, I think. Their special teams was probably the best in the country this year. I think that's a fair thing to say. Butch Jones claims that each coach on staff coaches a small block of special teams. His theory is that everyone's responsible for a part of it. But Mark Elder's also a really nice recruiter. He was one of the few coaches that had kind of good relationships going in the city of Memphis. So, I mean, that he will be missed in that capacity. I think the bigger question now is where does Tennessee turn and what's their next move? The common thought here in town is that they will hire graduate assistant Nick Sheridan, who was previously a passing game coordinator in South Florida. He has the pedigree. He's been working hands-on with Dobbs the last 2 years as a GA. But the weird thing is that there's a weird identity problem with the offense right now. Mike DeBoard is supposedly the quarterback's coach. When he got to Tennessee, he was praised as a kind of a QB guru in the past, and that he just never really worked with Josh Dobbs. It was entirely Nick Sheridan's job. You kind of wonder if Tennessee maybe wants to move the board into a offensive line running back or running game coordinator sort of thing, and find someone else who can be more involved with actually having Tennessee's receivers be utilized and throw the ball a little more.
Right.
It's certainly not a small impact loss for Tennessee.
Nick Sheridan, former Michigan great, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and he's very well liked and very highly thought of.
That's what I keep hearing. Like, I don't know a ton about him, but everybody seems to love him. Everybody seems to love this guy, so that's fine. You know, if that's who you want to replace, I know I've seen the name T. Martin floated out there, but that's just kind of like your annual T. Martin's going to come back to Tennessee coaching rumor, I'm guessing.
Yeah,
right? Like,
I don't know if you've heard about his, you know, his son just decommitted from USC, T. Martin said.
Right.
And right. It looks like he's heading for Clemson. And
oh, wow.
That's pretty interesting. So, I mean, I don't know what's going on with T. Martin. I mean, like, he just lost his son from Southern Cal. I mean, it's not when your dad's a coach and he coaches at, like, McNeese State, then you send your son somewhere else. But if you're at USC, you get your son to USC. I mean, that's the whole. I can't imagine the fans are too excited about him. You know, after his job was just basically pardoned. I mean, he was allowed to stay on that staff when Clay Helton took over. So. I don't know exactly how welcome T. Martin would be right at the second by Butch Jones. I know that, you know, T. Martin and oddly enough, Jalen Hurd have some, like, ongoing beef. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I am not, but that sounds great.
Well, yeah, it was during the recruiting cycle, I guess 2 years ago when Hurd was going through as a recruit and T. Martin, or maybe it was last year, when T. Martin was trying to recruit Alvin Kamara, and he told Kamara, Kamara's like, hey, I really would like to be a part of this 1-2 with Jalen Hurd. And T. Martin was like, man, I'm telling you, Jalen Hurd is soft. Like, he pretty openly referred to Jalen Hurd as being a soft player, which clearly is just about the exact opposite of how I would describe Jalen Hurd. And so, that comment didn't go over too well. It's reminiscent of the Lane Kiffin saying Alshon Jeffery is going to pump gas, but whatever.
Yeah, if you asked me to describe Jalen Hurd, soft would not even cross my mind. Like, he goes out of his way to find contact sometimes. Like, he loves. There's a good video montage that will be made in a year or two of Jalen Hurd running over a lot of defenders or running right into the pile and kicking his way out. Like, he is the farthest thing from soft. So I did not know that, but that's funny. The T. Martin thing is weird because I remember, I guess it was back when Butch first got hired, there was talk of T. Martin maybe joining his staff. And
well, he came here and he interviewed.
Right.
He knew he wasn't taking the job. He flew okay. here to interview. I think he thought he was doing the right thing with Tennessee fans by doing the interview. I think he thought he would come back and say, hey, like, you know, I love Tennessee. I appreciate you guys thinking of me, but I'm in a good spot right now. And that spot at the time was with Lane Kiffin, which made it kind of extra painful for Tennessee fans.
Right.
But I think there's still some lingering softness with T. Martin in Tennessee. I think he's not quite over the fact that he feels like, you know, he's the only championship winner in modern era of Tennessee football, and he still is. I don't know that he is appreciated the way that he probably should be here in Knoxville, but I think he's very aware of that.
Right. So Memphis, they're going to play Auburn in the Birmingham Bowl. Auburn's a 2.5-point favorite. You've seen both of these teams play this season, I'm assuming. I know. You know, we've talked about Memphis plenty of times on the podcast. I think we probably talked about how Auburn is not good. Like, they're just not a very good football team this year. They're not very good. And I mean, there was a part of the season where Gus Malzahn was maybe even thrown out for being on the hot seat because this is kind of the time now because he came in with Butch. So year three is when you want to start really seeing the trajectory start shooting upwards, because that's, you know, year three, and then on into year four is kind of where you make the big leap. Well, he took a step back with Auburn this year. So do you have a good feel for this game at all? I mean, Auburn minus 2.5, so obviously they expect it to be a close game, but I can't get a great grasp on it.
No, I think that's a fair line. I think, you know, with Fuente leaving, and there's just some questions about where is Memphis going to be mentally with, you know, and Paxton Lynch, you know, maybe looking forward a little bit. But Auburn's not good. They're going to – same as when Memphis plays any SEC team, Memphis is going to be outmatched athletically. But it is hard to get a feel on it because you don't know if Justin Fuente was there, I'd say, hey, let's ride Memphis into the sunset here. But – you just wonder how effectively they can recreate what he had going there.
Yeah, you do. Let's see, what else we got? Let's talk about a couple other bowl matchups. Miami versus Washington State. This is just kind of something that I think will be fun to watch. Washington State's been fun for me to watch all year long. They're laying 3 points against Miami in the Sun Bowl. Russell Athletic Bowl, North Carolina versus Baylor. I'm kind of out on Baylor in terms of, like, from a betting standpoint, but I would expect, like, get 100 points in that game. So it would at least be a shootout kind of fun to watch. The Peach Bowl is intriguing. Houston against Florida State. Again, Florida State, they're gonna outmatch Houston in terms of talent and probably an athletic standpoint. But Houston, you've got a little bit of stability there with Tom Herman. Florida State, you've got the talent and everything. But I don't know how much they're going to look forward to playing Houston. Like, I don't know how much that excites them getting up to play a team from the AAC in Houston. I think Houston's a pretty good team, so that could be fun. Fiesta Bowl against Notre Dame, against Ohio State. I think two good football teams. I think two teams that are probably as talented as anybody else that's playing in the college football playoff. So that's pretty fun. And then the Alamo Bowl, Oregon and TCU, it's a pick'em game. Oregon playing about as good as anybody in the country the last 5 or 6 games. And TCU, it's another one that, like, if 100 points are scored, I wouldn't be shocked. So any of these games jump out to you or anything else?
I would definitely bet North Carolina against Baylor. I like where your head's at with Houston. I do think Florida State's a pretty damn good team, but I do like where your head's at, and I have no problem giving them 7 points to play with. Ohio State, I'll take against Notre Dame, and I am probably leaning in the direction of TCU against Oregon.
Yeah. It's weird because Oregon, they're good. Like, they're playing well. They did not have a good start to the season at all, and they've been beating people left and right kind of to close out the season. So that'll be fun. There's some really bad bowl games with some really not very fun matchups. But some of these, there are a few to look forward to. You know, if we're being honest with ourselves, you look at the Tennessee versus Northwestern, I'm not sure that anybody outside of Vol fans and Northwestern fans are super excited for that game. Do you think?
I don't know. I would have thought, but I don't know if you caught John Gruden's little ploy on Mike and Mike the other morning. But they were on the show. On the show, at least they were saying that's one of the more interesting bowl games. I don't think it is. I think Tennessee, Michigan, if they had landed that matchup in the Citrus Bowl, would have been really interesting. I think it's a bad matchup for the Big Ten to send one of their better teams to Florida against Tennessee and what I think will be a pretty convincing Tennessee win. I'm trying to look at it as objectively as possible and remember that Northwestern is a good team, but that Stanford win they have, Stanford was trying to just kind of figure out their offense in that first game. That first game wins, I think, are just hard to take a lot into, and they just didn't have another impressive win.
Right.
And like you said, they have bad losses. So it's a big year. If the Big Ten can build on their bowl success from last year and get Michigan State cooking in the playoffs, and if they can do something, that's a big year for them. But overall, I think Northwestern's in a spot to make that conference look bad again, because Tennessee is still perceived as a very kind of middle-of-the-pack, lower-middle-of-the-pack SEC team. If they just clean up on two Big Ten teams 2 years in a row, it's a bad look for the Big Ten.
Yeah, it is. Real quick, any overarching big thoughts on the college football playoff matchups? I mean, they kind of matched up. Fred was Fred. Pro style with pro style. It's interesting kind of how they did the matchup. I think personally, from a Michigan State standpoint, that's the last team you wanted to play, because I think Alabama does exactly what they do, just with better athletes and better players and as good a coaching. D'Antonio is about as good as they come, I think, in college football, but Nick Saban is as good as they come. Like, he is the best, so... I thought it was a terrible matchup for Michigan State, and I'm looking forward to Oklahoma Clemson. Like, I think that could be a fun game.
Yeah, I think Clemson wins that one. I know they're dogged, but I just don't have a ton of faith in Oklahoma. The Michigan State of Alabama game is interesting, and how wonderful would it be to see Michigan State pull off another just kind of crazy last second heartbreaking loss against Alabama? That would be fun. heartbreaking win, rather. But no, I think Alabama probably wins that. I think we're probably looking at an Alabama-Clemson final, which is a really a very intriguing final, honestly. I think that would be the most enjoyable outcome.
Yeah, and I saw something where Saban has not lost to any former assistants that he's played with an average margin of victory of almost like 3 touchdowns or something like that.
He certainly padded his stats with Derek Dooley.
Like those numbers, Dooley helped inflate that average margin of victory. I guess it's not working in D'Antonio's favor. You mentioned John Gruden a little bit earlier. That guy is the biggest tease to Tennessee fans of anybody I have ever seen in my entire life. Like, he is all Tennessee. Like, it's hilarious. That guy loves the University of Tennessee. He never has anything but great things to say about it. You see him at Tennessee games. You see him, taking pictures with Peyton Manning and Butch Jones. And anytime he does a Monday Night Football game where Peyton's on, he loves Peyton. He loves Tennessee. And his son goes there and whatever. Like, it's just getting to the point where it's almost like it upsets me. Like, just go away, John. Like, if you're not going to come coach the Vols at some point, just go away because you're hurting my feelings. You're teasing me. You're drawing me back in every time.
Yeah. Yeah, I put on Twitter the other day, I was like, John Gruden has been consistently texting the Tennessee fan base at 2 a.m. on Friday night for the last 3 years, hey, are you up? He's been booty calling our emotions, but not taking us to dinner or letting any of his friends know that we're talking, that kind of thing. It's got to be uncomfortable for Butch Jones. I have to think it is because, keep in mind that John Gruden, like not even a year ago, said that Tennessee was his dream job. After he declined the job 3 years ago, so. If you're Butch Jones, you have to kind of – I mean, you can't say no to John Gruden endorsement. It's a double-edged sword for him because you can't turn him away because it's great PR for the program and for the university. But at the same time, here's a guy that 99.9% of the fan base would trade you out for in a heartbeat, and he's kind of just stepping into your territory a little too much. So it's a really weird thing. I kind of agree with you. It's like – it's fun when he does it, but if he's not going to follow through with it, then it's just sort of a weird situation.
It is. So I was talking with one of my buddies. I didn't put this on the topic, so I apologize. This is kind of out of left field, but I was talking to one of my buddies who's also a Vol fan. And I was just kind of asking him, I was like, of any of the coaches that changed jobs this year, would you be willing to swap out Butch Jones for that coach? So like Mark Rick, Justin Puente, whoever, as somebody that switched a job, would you swap out Butch Jones for them? And I was thinking about it, and there were a couple that made me think. Puente made me think. You at least give a look to somebody like Mark Rick, something like that. But no, I don't think I would. I feel pretty comfortable with where we are with Butch and where he's taking the program. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think Tennessee fans – gave Butch maybe a little harder time than he deserved this year for blowing a few leads. I don't think Tennessee's quite there yet. I think they're still a little bit of depth away from winning those kinds of games.
Right.
I think he's doing fine. I think he needs to make the right hires. I think he needs to keep his kids from transferring programs this offseason. And I think he needs to finish strong in recruiting. I think he can do all three of those things. I think he will finish strong in recruiting. But Tennessee, if Cam Sutton and Jalen Reeves-Maybin come back, which that's a very big question mark, still kind of to be seen here. If those guys come back, I think Tennessee should be favored to at least finish second in the East next year, if not win it. Someone has to exorcise the ghost of Florida. Again, it just has to happen. And when Butch can do that, he'll be in a much safer spot. If he could have won either one of those Florida games the last 2 years, our fan base would be much happier than they are right now, and that's just the fact of the matter. That game means so much. Tennessee fans would rather beat Florida and lose to Missouri or lose a bowl game. They just rather beat Florida. It's just excruciating to see that keep happening. But I think he's done a really nice job. I think he set goals when he got here, and I think he's met all those goals. So I think it's hard to say you trade him because he has done so much for the university to get back on track.
Yeah. A couple more things, and we'll get out of here. One, just kind of as a for all the gambling themes that that rolled with Bowling Green with us this year. They lose Dino. He takes over Syracuse, which is weird. And first of all, let me just say, I put this on there. I haven't said it yet. So go Google Dino Babers, just a headshot, a picture of him coaching, whatever, and guess how old he is. Because I promise it's at least 15 years younger than he actually is. He's 54 years old, and he is the best-looking 54-year-old I have ever seen in my entire life. There's not a wrinkle on that man. His hair is perfect. It just looks great. Like, how in the world is Dino 54 years old? So anyway, he takes the Syracuse job, which I don't know. I don't want to say that feels like a no-win situation, because I guess people have done okay at Syracuse in the past, but I don't know. That's not the job that I would have taken, I don't think, if I was Dino Babers. And maybe he figures, you know, he's losing a bunch of guys. He needs to go ahead and jump while he's hot. But I don't know. Syracuse is kind of a weird spot. It's not really – I mean, it's certainly not a football school. It's clearly a basketball school. It's really in a weird location. I don't know. I've got questions about that. But so Bowling Green makes a hire, a guy named Mike Jinks. Mike Jinks in 2012 was coaching high school football in Texas, and he got a job at Texas Tech as a running back coach, and he is now the Bowling Green head coach. So literally 3 years ago, this guy was coaching high school football, and he is now the head coach of Bowling Green. So we'll see. He's a young guy. He's 43 years old. So I guess that's who we're going to have to figure out if we're going to roll with next season. But, Dino Babers. He's 54. If I showed you a headshot of that Devin Hughes, would you have guessed that Dino is 54?
No, he's a sharp dude.
Right.
He looks better at 54 than I look at 27, so good for him.
Right.
Good for him. yeah.
Last thing, Will Muschamp going to South Carolina. We talked about it last week because it wasn't finalized, but it looked like that was probably going to happen. It's not good. Like, I don't even know how to really describe it. Like, South Carolina has known for a very long time that Steve Spurrier was not going to be their head coach. I mean, they had a jump start on just about every other program in terms of conducting a coaching
mm-hmm.
search. And it just kind of feels like they botched it, and they settled for Will Muschamp, who's certainly a big name, but there's not a lot of substance to go with that big name. So as a guy that roots for Tennessee, I love it. I think it's great. We'll see if he's learned from his mistakes of basically just completely punting on offense and trying to win it all with defense. But I don't know. Do you have any faith that Will Muschamp is going to be better the second time around?
Possibly, and that will if he is that sets a very interesting precedent, does it not? Like, usually you get your one shot and then you're done, especially a school like Florida. But if he was to bounce back and be successful at South Carolina, that sets a very interesting precedent for giving guys immediate second chances. So I think he'll probably screw up. I just don't think he has control of his emotions. Like, and it's been kind of sad to watch South Carolina fans try to justify this hire to everybody else. But I again from a Tennessee perspective, I'm very happy with it. Another little interesting note here is that I'm looking now. It says Greg Schiano is expected to accept the associate head coach and defensive coordinator position at Ohio State. That's just a monster hire for Urban Meyer right there.
Wow, Urban strikes again. Like he's just
great. Urban and Saban just get richer.
They're amazing. They really are. Okay, I promise this is the last question. We'll bounce out of here. What is your confidence level that Tennessee does not lose any more assistant coaches?
Very low. I think there's a if Willie Martinez is offered the Auburn job, he has to take it. Those are the kind of things you're okay with. You know, I mean, like you can't like UT fans were very gracious with Mark Elder when he left. There was no ill will towards Mark Elder. I mean, when you get a promotion like that, you take it. That's just sort of that's a gimme. And I think everybody would kind of understand if some folks on the staff went to Miami with Mark Richt. There's a lot of connections there. I know Zach Azani has been, and there's been conversation about him being in play at Maryland. that seems to have cooled down a little bit. I haven't heard much of that. But I will be pretty surprised if Tennessee enters next season with the exact same staff, minus Elder, they have right now. I think we'll see some more movement.
Right. Kevin Hughes, you can follow him on Twitter, at KAHughes88. Any stuff to plug that's coming out in the next week or so?
Not too much. I have not been able to do much writing of late. I am hosting the RTI radio show, and by that nature, the podcast 3 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. We're having a good time with that. Just follow us at writingtopinsider.com, and you can catch up on all your UT news there.
All right, Kevin Hughes, I'll talk to you next week. Thanks, man.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Take care, bye.